You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, Colt Molesky here bringing you the show. You can find me on zonecoverage.com if you're looking for any written work. Otherwise, iTunes, online, various websites, on Twitter. You can follow me at C. Molesky. All those are all great ways to find the show and other pieces that I'm working on. And today we have a very special guest. He hasn't been on in a very long time. It's been too long, but he's the broadcast extraordinaire out of Northwestern St. Paul, Brendan Scarborough. How are you doing, man?
Hey, it's good. I'm glad that I'm back. You're right. It's been too long. Let's hop into the NBA, man.
Oh, my goodness. So much is happening, too. So much is going on around the NBA. We've got a lot to get to today. I wanted to hit quite a few storylines, quite a few headlines before we jump in to the Timberwolves game. So I'm just going to jump right in and get right to it. First thing I want to talk about is the Milwaukee Bucks, and specifically Giannis Antetokounmpo. Right away at the beginning of the season, people were talking about him in the MVP conversation. People were talking about how he might be one of the top three best players in the league. That has cooled off since then, but he hasn't necessarily cooled off. He's still averaging 29.9 points per game, 10.3 rebounds per game, 1.6 blocks per game. But the Bucks themselves have cooled off somewhat, but he hasn't. Is it unfair to take him out of the MVP conversation?
I would say no. It would be unfair to take him out right now. It's fairly early on the season. We're not even at the All-Star break yet, you know. And again, this is a streak. The Cleveland Cavaliers, the other person in their division, has really heated up, you know, at a 20-8 record right now. And I just think that the Bucks may be on like a little bit of a downward streak, but I think that, you know, give it a little bit of time, you know, get some wins under their belt. I think Giannis can definitely still be in this MVP race. And, you know, he shows with his highlights that he's definitely a candidate.
Well, and you could argue that the best player right now until maybe Jabari Parker, the second best player on the team until Jabari Parker comes back, it might be Bledsoe, who they got just a couple of weeks ago from the Suns. So that definitely isn't a great thing for the Bucks, just if you're looking at the team and how they've performed as a whole, to have him be maybe the second best player, that's not exactly a great mark for the team.
Yeah, I would say that as well. And again, like you want, we've talked, a complete team. If you're going to be a really good team, you need at least three solid players. And I would say other than Bledsoe and Antetokounmpo, there's not really that one solid guy that they can depend on game in and game out. And I think they're really awaiting for
Parker to come back.
Say it again?
For Parker to come back, I would say.
Exactly. That's exactly what they're waiting for. But I think as of right now, yeah, you're right. They don't have that solid third guy outside of Bledsoe and Antetokounmpo.
And some people would argue Chris Middleton, he's not bad. He's averaging 19.9 points per game, but he just has cold nights. He doesn't do a ton of rebounding or get a ton of assists. So when he's not scoring or shooting really well, there's not another thing that he can really turn to that he's really exceptional at. I just think once this team gets Jabari Parker back, I think he automatically makes them one of the top four teams in the East. But right now without him, they're just a bunch of B players around a really good all-star in Antetokounmpo. And so it'll be interesting to see how that affects his MVP stock, because it seems like he could very well be an MVP candidate if his team's doing better around him.
Absolutely, you're right. And, I mean, you know, even I would say Malcolm Brogdon, someone who as well, like, he does very well. But if he's not shooting super well, he's not going to get you a ton of rebounds. He's not going to get you a ton of assists. But points-wise, he's going to do very well. And, yeah, you're right. If no one else around him is doing very well, he kind of gets edged out of the MVP race, you know. But we've also seen in other years, you know, when LeBron won the MVP, if you're the only player on a team, you know, who's carrying the team, you know, throughout the season, that could also raise your MVP stock a lot if you really stand out from your teammates. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens throughout the year. But I definitely think as of right now, it'd be kind of unfair to take him out of this MVP race.
Yeah, as would I. I think you really have to have the full complement around him to give him a fair shot. We've been doing this for some time where we talk about just the NBA in general, and that's why I love having you on, is I like covering NBA storylines before we dive into Timberwolves talk. And you and I have been big fans of LeBron James and his two-way play since we met. For the last, what is it, 4 or 5 years, we've been talking about the NBA ad nauseum. Do you, even though LeBron James had a really great season this year, and even though the Cavaliers just went on a 15-1 run over the last 16 games, do we consider James Harden as the front runner for the MVP right now?
It's tough to say, for me to say front runner, because, you know, we've talked about this, and we talked about this when Steph Curry won the MVP. To me, the MVP is the person who's most valuable to their team. So if you took away that player, you know, would the team be way worse, or would they be able to sustain it? And that's one thing I didn't like when Steph Curry won. You know, if when he left, the Warriors still had a winning record without him, you know. So I think, I don't know if I can say front runner right now just because of Chris Paul and like how well they've been doing with Chris Paul. They're 11-0 with Chris Paul right now. And I get that it's like, okay, well, you know, there are other people, like LeBron has his people that he works with. We're just talking about Giannis and the teammates that he needs to use. I don't know if right now he's far and away the most valuable player. He's having an impressive season. I think, you know, he doesn't have to produce as much because, you know, he has other players stepping up around him. So I don't know if he's the front runner for me. I definitely think he's one of the higher candidates. I don't know if I can say front runner right now.
And that's the interesting thing, too, I think, about this year's MVP race, at least so far, is you have such different candidates. You have LeBron James, who I would argue, even though they're winning games and Kevin Love has been playing well, he's still going to win it because there's the perception that without LeBron, this is a very mediocre, barely 500 team. With James Harden, I think you give it to him just because if he wins, it's because he's been able to control this complement of players. And you have Chris Paul coming in, you have Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, all these guys, Clint Capella, all these guys who are really solid players, and he's kind of the gel, the thing that keeps them together and keeps the whole machine working. If Durant is in the MVP conversation, it's because of what he's able to do while Curry's out. If Antetokounmpo's in the conversation, it's because he's part of this great whole of a team. There's a lot of candidates for MVP, and all of them are so different in the way they play and the teams that they're on. It's going to make this race really interesting right down to the last couple games, just because of how different each scenario is for each player.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was, you know, just looking at the stats, you know, all around points, most total points, James Harden leads by a fairly considerable margin, almost 40 more points than the next person. But again, like one of the most impressive things that James Harden has been able to do is he has not slowed his offensive production all season. You know, he's been the guy that they can go to expect almost 30 points a night. You know, he's averaging 31 points a game, and that's really impressive. And his assists are still very high, even with the presence of Chris Paul there. So again, it is very different from LeBron James, you know. LeBron James has been playing that, you know, we've been seeing him in that point forward position. You know, he's been really good on defense, maybe something where James Harden's a little lacking. But James Harden shooting 40% from three, again, very different. We'll just have to see how the season shakes out, but I don't know if this early we've had this close of an MVP race. It's very, very close.
Yeah, and it's going to make for a really great race down the stretch of the season here. Moving on to, I wanted to get back to LeBron James just quickly. I wanted to hit on the way that they have turned the Cleveland Cavaliers around. We were kind of hinting at this at the beginning of the season, but this is just proof. You can't ever really put LeBron away. Like, he's gonna pull his team back around. They're gonna come out of these slumps, and they have looked great over the last 16 games. Like I said, 15-1 over the last 16. They have looked phenomenal and gone through a tear.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, LeBron James, and it's hard to believe this, Colton, that it seems the older he gets, the better he is. You know, he's shooting the highest field goal percentage that he's shot, you know, to date. You know, he has, I think, only two other seasons where he's scored more points, averaged more points a game. He is playing some of his best basketball right now, and it's just so impressive to watch, you know, that he's been able to sustain this for a while. And, you know, I think it just speaks to the leadership qualities of him as well. I know I'm totally sound like a LeBron James bandwagon, but I'm on it. I'm riding it. But, you know, for him to just turn this team around, like, you know, the first few games of the season, you know, you were like, Brennan, when do we hit the panic button for this Cleveland Cavalier team? You know, and he's just shown, you know, keep your hand off the trigger a little bit. You know, I know what I'm doing here. You know, I've been in the league long enough. I know how to manage this.
Yeah, he is just exceptional, and it has been interesting because this is another Cleveland Cavaliers team. I think a lot like last year, where defense is something that you worry about, and we all know how good of a defender LeBron is, but outside of him, I'm not really super confident in anybody they have on the defensive side. And so that, and you talk about Isaiah Thomas coming back. Yeah, he'll help the offense, but he's a negative on defense as well. So it'll be very interesting as we head down the stretch. What do they, is there a move that they have available to try and fix the defense, or is just this just the way it's going to be, where they're going to have to put up about 115 points a night just to win games?
Yeah, I would say if there is a move on defense, it's, I would say, to lock down, you know, that, I would say, like, a guard position, you know, that, like, having a defensive guard. You know, Derrick Rose, I would say, isn't a defensive guard. Jose Calderon is in a defensive guard. And as you said, Isaiah Thomas is in a defensive guard. In fact, quite the opposite, actually. You know, I remember us talking about the Celtics, you know, last year when they were playing the Cavs, and you were like, hey, Isaiah Thomas is a guy you key on if you're coming against him on defense. You know, this is a guy you want to go at, especially with the size disadvantage. I would say for them, you know, and I would almost tell, if, you know, if I'm the coach, I think I almost tell Iman Shumpert, like, hey, you know, we're really going to need you to key on our defense. Like, we love what you're doing offensively, but hey, we can't put up 115 a night. Like, that just cannot happen. You know, well, at least you don't want it to happen. You want your offense to be able to do that, but you don't want to have your defense let that up. So I would say maybe just like a guard, or, you know, even a center. But I know with Tristan Thompson's contract, that probably won't happen. But, yeah, just really, you really got to tighten up on defense. I would say you're not going to want to have to put up almost 120 points a night.
And another guy that stands out, J.R. Smith, has to get back to that D and, or 3-and-D kind of player. And his numbers are down from last year, and so he needs to try and find some level of consistency that he can get back to that he found last year, the year before, just because right now he's not playing very well on defense, and he's not really finding his shot either. And I know there were some problems with him not starting and coming off the bench, and he was having problems with that. Well, now he's starting again. Now you need to find that rhythm again.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you're saying, a 3-and-D type player, you know, somebody who can hit the 3-point shot on one end, but, you know, hold his own on the other end. And there's just been so many times this season where he hasn't been reliable in each of those senses, you know. And that's what I think separates a good player from a great player. You know, hey, maybe I'm not hitting tonight. Maybe I'm just focusing on the defense, or vice versa. You know, I'm a turnstile right now, but you know what? I'm hitting my threes, and I need to make sure that I'm doing that. It just seems that he hasn't. I feel that he's been in the league long enough to where he knows what he needs to do to make it happen. But as of right now, you're right. He needs to get back to where he was.
All right, we're going to move on to some other NBA headlines. But first, I wanted to talk about my favorite place to gamble, MyBookie. Holiday cash, you need it, and I know where to get it. MyBookie is the place to score serious cash on your sports predictions. Believe it or not, the holidays are just around the corner. And while that means plenty of parties, gifts, and spending, it also means there's lots of football, basketball, and hockey games for you that you can score big on every day. And I would throw in there, too, soccer. I bet on Premier Soccer regularly every weekend. That's a great way to make some cash as well. Man up and play like the pros on game day. You can play the money line, side, or total. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs. It offers super fast payouts when you win. Here's a couple things that you should know going into MyBookie. where your bet is just as important as what you're betting on. And if you want to make money betting on the games, you got to go to MyBookieAG. They're the only site I'd recommend, and I do. I use them every single weekend. I trust them, but you don't have to take my word for it. Check them out yourself. They have odds on every matchup and a mobile site that makes wagering on your smartphone a breeze. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA, to activate offer. Visit MyBookieAG today. You play, you win, you get paid. Again, my promo code LOCKEDONNBA to get a 50% bonus. Alrighty, so the last storyline I wanted to hit before diving into the Timberwolves game was the Toronto Raptors. Why is nobody talking about this team? They're 18-8. DeMar DeRozan is playing way better. He's shooting way better. He's become a better passer. Kyle Lowry, after that slow start where everybody was kind of on him for, he hinted that he really wanted to go to the Spurs in the offseason when he was available, but he didn't. He ended up staying with the Raptors. But now he's put together a really solid season, and he is always a deadly shooter from outside. Why is nobody talking about this team that seems to be maybe the, it looks like the Raptors team that you've wanted them to be for a while, and they just haven't hit it yet? Now it seems like they might be there.
Yeah, and if not there, they're at least getting there. As you said, DeMar DeRozan really stepping it up. Kyle Lowry, he's always been an offensive threat. And, you know, this team, starting out a little slow as well, really getting into their groove now, really seeing that, you know, hey, they can play a good basketball this year. And they always have been able to. They haven't just been able to make it click in the past few years. But you're right. I don't know why more people aren't talking about them. The stat sheet, they look good. You know, they look good on the court. I have no idea why they aren't being talked about more.
DeMar DeRozan, 23.7 points per game, 5.2 assists. He's shooting 47% from the field. I know I was down on them in the offseason just because they were losing some of their role players, but this team has looked really good. They've had some young guys. Ananobi has been a young guy who's stepped up for them and played really well. I just think that this could be, they have the formula that, and I know too, maybe there's a little fatigue and that this team just pumps out 45 to 50 win seasons every year and gets to the playoffs and doesn't do a ton. But that isn't necessarily to say you shouldn't appreciate what they're able to do every season in the regular season. And yet again, this team has consistently looked good, and they're back at it, and they have been on a really solid run here. And yeah, after a slow start, they're looking good. I think more people need to pay attention to this team, and I think they have a little bit of a formula if DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry can keep playing at an elite level, and DeMar DeRozan especially can keep passing the way he is and facilitate the offense the way he is next to Kyle Lowry, who already had that aspect of his game down. I think this could be a team that actually could cause some trouble for teams like Cleveland in the playoffs.
Yeah, and if not, I mean, and you're right. You know, they're playing very well all across the board. And, you know, and that's another thing. Consistency all the way across. And, you know, at least as of right now, Cleveland has been on a hot streak. But you're right. That is something that they've, you know, struggled with earlier on, and hopefully we'll see what happens. But if this team is able to stay consistent, I mean, I wouldn't even say only Cleveland. They could definitely give Boston a little bit of run for their money as well if they're able to show up every night.
And definitely just a phenomenal backcourt. Just as, not even stats and everything else out the window, just a phenomenal backcourt to watch play. Just visually, it's a fun team to watch. And I think people forget that just because I think there's a little bit of Toronto fatigue about how they pump out these winning seasons, but and then don't really advance too far into the playoffs. Or if they do, they always are met by Cleveland and they get handled there. I think there's a little bit of fatigue, and I think it's a little unfair to Toronto.
I would say so. And it's tough because, you know, like, and it's kind of like the same with West and Golden State. You know, everyone expects Golden State's going to just beat whoever they play against. And, you know, you always kind of have that in the back of your mind. But you have to approach every season differently. Like, this Toronto team definitely looks strong enough to dethrone anybody. And it'll be a very, very exciting playoffs if this is able to continue.
All right. We have talked about the NBA storylines. We've hit up all those. and we are going to get to the Timberwolves game right after this quick break. Timberwolves have another home game facing off against the Sacramento Kings. Brendan, I'm not nervous about this game. I'm not worried about this game, but at the same time, there have been a couple points in the season. I'm looking at the Phoenix game where the Timberwolves have faced a lesser opponent and they've played down to their competition as opposed to just crushing a bad team. And the Sacramento Kings team is a bunch of young guys who are still trying to figure it out and still trying to get into the same groove and the same rhythm. So if I'm looking at this team, who am I worried about if I'm a Timberwolves fan and I know that they're supposed to beat this team, but at the same time they've had trouble with bad teams? Who should I be concerned about coming into the building for the Kings?
Well, there's a couple guys that I would say. One, I would say who hasn't been doing really well. Like De'Aaron Fox, the duo of De'Aaron Fox and George Hill. Now, even though they on the stat sheet they don't look very impressive, George Hill definitely has the expertise to know what he's doing. And especially if Jeff Teague is lacking on defense this game, him and De'Aaron Fox can both, we know, they can go off if they want to. Another guy, Buddy Hield, you know, again, he's only averaging 12.6 points a game, but his field goal percentage is almost at 50%. His three-point percentage is higher than his field goal percentage. Definitely someone who can go off. And the guard play this game for the Timberwolves has to be on point. The defense cannot slack this game if you want to beat this team.
No, I think you're absolutely right. The guards have to play really well. And I think Fox is a really solid defender. His scoring isn't quite there yet, but he is a solid defender. And Hill is he's the old vet who's going to come in and if there's an opportunity to get his team. I assume they're going to be down, and maybe that's an inappropriate assumption, but tonight I assume that the Timberwolves are going to go up right away in the first quarter. But if the Timberwolves leave a door open for the Kings to get back into this game, George Hill is going to find it. He's going to try and operate this offense in a fashion to get them back into this game. So I think early on, if the Timberwolves aren't careful, this could be close. Like the Dallas Mavericks, the last game was close too, but two games ago when they played them and it was really tight in that first half, and then they shorted up and were able to pull away in the second half. I think that's the kind of first half you could see in this Kings-Timberwolves game, is that the Timberwolves maybe lax up a little bit in the second quarter on defense, and then right away the Kings are on top of them, and all of a sudden it's a three-point game, and you're not sure what happened.
Absolutely, and I would even say that Zach Randolph down low is definitely someone. You know, at Memphis we saw this a ton. You know, he's not going to blow up on you for, you know, 35 points, just lighting you up. But what he will do is he'll score a quiet 22, and you'll wonder, like, how the heck did this guy get so many points? He's such a hard worker. And he knows exactly what he needs to do inside. And that, too, inside, outside, this team has threats if they're able to get everything going. And I just think that the Timberwolves really need to make sure that they do not overlook this game. You don't want to overlook any game. But don't let, you know, the 30th in points per game fool you. This team can definitely get going if everything is clicking that night.
Well, and the way that the Timberwolves have played this season, you really just don't want to underestimate teams just because, again, they've stooped to the level of their competition a few times this season. And so you don't want to get in a position where you're having to play your – I know Thibodeau will probably play Butler another 40 minutes, which he's done all December, but you don't want to have to do that. You want to be able to pull guys out in the fourth quarter because you're up by 15, 20 points on the Sacramento Kings, and you want to give those guys like Butler and Wiggins and Towns some rest because they have not had any of it this month. Another thing I'm looking at when I'm approaching this game, Zach Randolph and Willie Cauley-Stein at center. Both of those guys play close to about 30 minutes. Randolph at 27, Cauley-Stein at 29. So they're going to get about pretty even minutes. And both those guys are pretty physical, especially Randolph. So Towns needs to try and match their physicality because Randolph is going to come to play. He's going to come to play, and he's going to push and shove. And he might not have the crazy – he might not have the Boogie Cousins kind of numbers, but he's going to play very physical with Towns. And so Towns has to be mentally prepared to match – his level of play, because Randolph is going to push him around in this game.
Absolutely. And it's just the physicality too. Towns generally is more of a finesse player. He can be physical if he wants to, but you have to be physical with Zach Randolph. If not, he's going to push you all around. You can't let that happen.
this would be this is a great game. I feel like I'm just getting that feeling that this would be a really great game for Teague to have a himself a night. I feel like if he can get away from the young guards like Fox and kind of put them on their heels, he could go off for something like 10 assists and maybe have 25 points. This feels like a game where if they start out really well, a guard like Teague could get away with some stuff and put up some shots against some younger players and have a really solid night. What do you think?
I was thinking the same thing. You know, if Teague is able to get away, if Teague is able to, you know, if he's able to get everything going, Teague can definitely be dangerous in this. I think that he is the better choice at point guard, and it's just really how he plays tonight. You know, offensively, if everything's working, I think if Teague has some space, you know, to shoot, you know, to drive and all that stuff, I think that he could really be dangerous against this team.
All right. Before we head out here, you want to give us a score prediction?
Oh, my. I'm going to guess 115-97 Timberwolves.
That's exactly where I had it right around there. I had like 110-95, 110-98, somewhere in there for the Timberwolves. I just really think that even if the defense isn't playing well for the Timberwolves, their offense and the talent they have offensively is just so much more capable. And if this is a close game in like the second quarter and there's 6 minutes left in the half and all of a sudden it's a three-point game, I feel like that's a situation where Butler takes over and goes off for like a little six-point run and pulls away again before halftime, and then the rest of the game they just continue to build on a lead. The offensive talent on this Timberwolves team is to the point where they can get bailed out even if the defense doesn't play well against a bad Sacramento team.
Absolutely. I 100% agree.
All right, that's it for us. Thanks for coming on the show, Brandon. I know we both actually write for SB Nation's Conquest Chronicles, so if you want to see something written by Brandon, he had a really nice piece on the Cotton Bowl coming up here. He had a nice preview up there, so definitely go check out that website for some written work from Brandon. That's all for us. Thanks for coming on again, Brandon. It's been too long, and we got to have you on the show again real soon.
Absolutely, I love it. And we got to do it live, Colton. That was probably my favorite show. Like looking at your face across the way, you know?
I love looking at your face as well, Brandon. Though the bromance is real. The bromance is very real.
Absolutely.
He's Brandon, I'm Colton, and this has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.